Hey, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Studies Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. And let's have the lovely cat come up and do our joke.
Cat alcoholic. Why aren't people in recovery good dancers? They lose interest after 12 steps.
Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a minute to get situated. Please turn off all your devices, any that make noise that might and will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Everybody ready? Okay, so let's start the meditation. Fog light prayer. For those that don't know it, it's here and on the screens, either side of me. Fog light prayer. God, like a fog light, so those whom are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. Okay. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Debbie to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience.
Deb, I'm an alcoholic. The spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Although it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformation, though frequent, are by no means a rule. Most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He could only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or a belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it is kind of important to know what one is. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode, or just turn them off. Okay, I'd like to welcome our speaker. This is his second session. Welcome, Peter.
All right. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank the group for having me back here and get to share with you over the next, 11 weeks or so. Hopefully we're all here in 11 weeks. I get to travel a lot and get out to conferences and stuff, and I had a old friend called me to go up to Maryland to do something in September for some event up there. And, just when you think you're really sharp and have insight, somebody pulls a prank on you, you realize I still have such a long way to go. John had a shirt last week, work in progress. That's right across my forehead. And so he calls me up and he says, listen, the budget's a little low. You may have to sleep on a sponsee's couch. And I went, oh. And so I'm thinking of excuses to get out. He says, but don't worry. His wife just got out of a psych ward. She's a crackhead. He's got 6 dogs, 3 cats. And the kids like to take pictures of people at night, if you don't mind. And so I said, well, I don't know. How about if I pay for my own hotel? And he got me. So, yeah. And trust me, I've been to places over the years where it felt just like that. I've packed luggage with a really nice suit and new shoes, and I get there, and it's a campground, and I'm in a cabin, and they don't have a hair blower, so I'm looking to go home at that point, you know. Marion always says, let's go camping, and if there's no room service, I don't leave the house. I mean, it's just the way it is. Anyway, June 23rd, 1988 was when God separated me from alcohol. Yeah, I'm not a rough and tumble guy. I'm sorry. It's just not me. I grew up in Brooklyn. I know nothing about camping or hiking. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And I get to talk to you on hopefully on most nights as a recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And by this time, hopefully, have recovered from a lot of things that accompany alcoholism. What I've learned over the years from my get-go in here, and it has become more pronounced over the years, is that what our book talks about, bottles are just a symbol. It's a symptom of a greater problem. And if I think I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous just to stop drinking, I'm in for a rude awakening, because my alcoholism doesn't live in a bottle of whiskey. It lives right in here. And so what I need to do is experience some sort of transformation through the bottoming out in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we always talk about the bottom coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, but how often do we talk about, or we hear people sharing about the bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, of trying to live life on self-will and thinking that because I walked into a room of AA, the sacred rooms of AA, that somehow, some way, all the isms, all of me is going to suddenly just disappear into the wind. And what happens is it seems to be even more pronounced when I don't have a drink. If you remember when we were new or around some youngins in AA, you know, while we're drinking and doing some other things, we're pretty predictable. We're antisocial. We have a lot of things going on, but we're fairly predictable. And when we're drunk, we're drunk. When we come into sobriety, early sobriety, suddenly all that stuff comes to the surface and we're not pouring alcohol or other substances on it. And we have someone who's way beyond restless, ill, and discontented. We have someone who's narcissistic to the core, self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed. Everything's a drama and everyone's wrong and I'm right. And we will fight. We will defend that till the end. That's just how we operate. And suddenly, you know, when I'm out there and Flacco, the drug dealer, says the line is over there, or the bartender says you got to wait, I wait and I get in line and I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and say, you can't sit in the front row. You have to sit in the second row. I'm throwing chairs through a window. What do you mean? Don't you know who I am? We're not good at following direction. So I guess the moral of the story is coming to AA is not going to erase, the meetings itself is not going to erase what I suffer from. Many will come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not many will stay, and even less will get free. How free do I want to be? When I was drinking and doing some other things, I did no due diligence on the substances that went into my body or got a background check on the liquor store owner. I just says, give me, and it went in. And we're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and suddenly I'm questioning God, I'm questioning the steps, I'm questioning the big book, I want a background check on my sponsor, I need a police report on the members in my AA, I do all this stuff, and all it is an excuse to go use again, because I'm truly not done. When I'm done, I'm become very negotiable. Alcohol beats me into a state of reasonableness. So I have to ask myself a question. If I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous for 90 days, have I been through the steps yet? Had some sort of awakening? How many people am I sponsoring after 90 days? Which flies in the face of some of our AA halls where they tell you do a step a year and don't do the steps. You're not ready for a fourth step. I'm just not ready to die. I think I need to do a fourth step. I'm not ready to go back out again. I think I need to get into amends like now. You know, Big Book says, may you find him now, with a big exclamation, means now, means like right now, not in 90 days. And so for me, in June of 88, prior to that, I was negotiating all the time. I had contemporary investigation. I thought it was a cult. A lot of things were going on inside of me. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, teachable. But I still had the isms with me. And I still had contempt. I still spoke the same way. I still had the same sort of attitude. My outlook on life had not changed. And I was just going to settle for, I didn't drink today, so I'm a winner. And that's not true. That's not a fair statement. It's great I didn't use, but I probably harmed a whole bunch of people, if not outwardly, inwardly, with my character assassination. Say, when I'm out there, if we think about it, we're always seeking control. We're trying to first control how much we use. Trying to regulate control. I won't get drunk. I won't wind up in, you know, here. I won't wind up in some flea bag motel. I won't get arrested. I'll regulate and control. Even if I get blind drunk, I'll get up and go to work tomorrow. I'll control what people say, control what they do. I'll control everything. I'll control my life. Be a master of my own destiny. Nothing could be more delusional than that. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm still the same guy trying to control events, trying to control people, trying to control a meeting. What I do is I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, and I'm wondering, what did I do wrong? Don't you know what my intentions are? I'm just controlling, and something I can't control is like trying to put water in my hand and squeezing it to hold onto it. It falls out. The delusion that I have any kind of control, and repeating that over and over and over again and expecting different results. And the very same mind that looking to fill the hole is the very same mind that keeps digging the hole even deeper. It's a self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We are the us. I'm the us. You're the us. We're the us. Self, this entity comes in and it manifests in different ways. Self is self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed, egotistical, hypersensitive, all of that stuff. So this self comes in and takes us over. I've heard for years, self can't overcome self. I can't fix this mind with the same broken mind. And what I tend to believe, and I think I shared this last week, that I am my story. I am my defects. I am my defects. I am my story. This is me. And it isn't. It is something that I became. It is something that has come into me. And once I get clear on self can be defeated, it's not part of me, and it will be defeated by the touch of God, then suddenly I can separate from it. Most of us are walking around thinking, I am my defects, I am my illness, and it's attached to me, it's glued to me, and I'll always be this way. How could I get rid of that? How could I cast out something that is part of me? It's like me trying to separate my arm from my hand. And so we walk around with the weight of the world on our back with 20 years sober. You know, I'm hanging in there. How you doing, Joe? I'm hanging in there. How long are you here now? 45 years, but I'm hanging in there. I'm not leaving till a miracle happens. I mean, what bondage? And who is really my enemy is not you, not the people who do bad things to me. It's me, because I'm still seeing the world through the self. So I have to bottom out with that. I have to run out of road to be reasonable, to be teachable, to try a different way. That doesn't feel good when the ego gets holes punched into it. I feel like I'm completely in a place of defeat, not victorious, which is a great thing. Standing in the presence of God, sometimes I believe it's going to be victorious butterflies and rainbows. But what really sometimes will happen to me is a place of complete defeat, where of myself I am nothing. That doesn't feel good at first. But I begin to shift. And what happens is my outlook on life changes and my behaviors begin to change. In my most weakest place, when I'm completely powerless, when I'm completely realize I have no control, is when God feeds me his strength and wisdom and guidance. As long as I think I can control, I have strength, I have power, I have knowledge, that is proportional to how much God I think I need. Well, I got the first step down. I got spirituality. I just lost the first step and just lost spirituality. Well, I'm in a place of myself. I am nothing. Only God can heal me. Only God can remedy this monster that I'm up against, because I can't do anything. And I throw myself on bended knees at the mercy of God. Suddenly, I get power. Even though I may not feel like I've gotten power, I've just got my legs out of the ditch. Because I realize there's something other than me that can fix me. And if I think about my life, my in and out of treatment and trying to get sober in AA, how I still wanted to some way manage and control my life. Manage and control my life. And if we think about how often do we pray, and really the motive is to pray, even when we're praying for other people who are, God forbid, sick, we're still kind of control how they're going to heal. And maybe God's saying, no, they're coming home. Please let them get better. That's wonderful, but I'm controlling. So when I go into prayer, what I'm really doing in prayer is seeking control. And if something turns out the way I think it ought to, I really believe I have control. God loves me better than you, and he even exists because he just answered my prayers. Nothing could be more delusional. It's just the way God played it out. Do you ever pray for someone who, God forbid, is ill and then they pass? Like, where was God? I knew God was a hoax. This whole prayer thing doesn't work. And maybe God says, you've had enough time here. Come home to paradise. I'm giving you a reward. You're coming home. I don't see it that way. How often do I interpret pain? We're all going to have pain. If you're new and you think there's all butterflies and rainbows, it can be. But welcome to some pain, because you're finally waking up to reality. That sometimes pain, I interpret it as bad. This is bad. Like God sent me the trials of Job. This is bad. And the example I always use is, you know, when I got into my seventh treatment center after a detox, it was the world had, I felt like, caved in on me. This is a really painful thing. I'm going through my seventh treatment center, my seventh detox. I'm not bouncing back. I'm just and sick all the time. I can't get out of bed. I got hepatitis C that's knocking me down. Oh, my God. And everyone outside the circle was saying, this is wonderful. He's finally going to get better. You see that? So I interpret pain as bad. We have growing pains in recovery, yes? You know? Writing an inventory, looking at a fourth column, looking at me and my behavior. That's not pleasant. If it's pleasant, you're a sociopath. Look how many people I hurt. Ain't this great? You know, you look at that stuff and you say, wow, this is not pleasant. Writing a sex inventory, oh my God. It's painful, but it is not bad. It's actually great. It's climbing out of the ditch. One of the things I woke up to years ago, it came from my grand sponsor, Don P., who shared with me, like, you know, studying books and working with books is a wonderful thing. I still do it. It's really important for me to sit and pray and meditate throughout the day and have my books, and I study them and I mark them up. I take them back. That's just part of how God made me. But I'm no longer seeking just information on a page so I can spit it back to you. That's useless. It's useless to you, and it's even more useless to me. But it's about seeking a transformation with the information, so like the big book or scripture, whatever it might be, becomes who I be. It becomes internalized. Where my walking around represents that information. And here's the thing. If I put all those books together, they shout one word, love. And in order to experience love in all I do, I have to experience the death of self. Self is the enemy. Love is the answer. Love is synonymous with God. Unconditional love. Even when people annoy the heck out of me and do unfair things, and I get involved in a drive-by, if you will. You know, the character assassination, hypocrisy is one of my hot buttons. I can't stand being around hypocrites. But can I meet that after the inventory, after some prayer, with unconditional love? If I'm not, what I'm doing is just living life the way I always lived, expecting different results. So I share this because how do we get, for some of us who have been around a while, how do we get step two to meet us where we are with 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 30 years sober? Well, I haven't had a drink in 30 years. Does step two apply? Absolutely. I need to look at the layers and where my life is now. You know, what areas of my life are out of integrity? I'm not drinking, but my financial life is off the wall. I'm spending money I don't have all the time. There's no such thing as a budget. There's no such thing as saving. Is there just get it and spend it? And then I wonder why I'm broke. Is our sex life completely off the chain? We're doing the same thing sober as we did when we're out there, maybe even worse. In fact, probably worse, because we're alive and everything's working now. And we're driven by this stuff. Driven. We're not even moved. We're driven by it. States of obsession over everything. Food. You know how many cats I know come into AA? You know, you put on weight when you get sober because we're so sick when we're out there. And you put on some weight and you look healthy. And then you see them in 6 months. They're like 100 pounds overweight. Because they're gorging on food to replace the hole in the soul. and they'll go on a diet next week, and then they have these eating disorders because food is the bag of dope, food is the drink. I have a part of my life that's completely out of integrity, and I'm expecting it to change on its own. And what's really frightening, I can't do much about it other than surrender. So I bottom out, the bottom, June 88. And I had no idea that I was going to land in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, June of 88, the last thing that that was in my realm of thinking was Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know why that is. It's possible because I knew AA was a fraud and it didn't work. And I had no, in my realm of thinking, any idea that I was going to begin a relationship with God because I knew God was a fraud and it didn't work. I just didn't want to die. But in that moment, the only place I can turn back to was God. And God, if you will reveal himself or herself or itself, whatever you want to call it, to us. And if you doubt that, stick around a little while and work out in a spiritual gym. You will have a conscious contact, a very real contact with a God of your understanding. It will speak to you. I'm so done with some folks who say, if you hear the sound of God, keep coming back. And they almost mock it. Well, who else is God going to speak to? But us. But his kids. Not only in AA, but just us. So after my treatment center, which lasted about a year in Minnesota, I was brought to a home group, and I was attracted to men different than I was used to hanging around with. I was attracted suddenly to what I call spiritual men who seemed to get behind a podium and get dressed for the occasion. And they spoke with integrity, and they walked with integrity. I mean, they had their stuff. We all do. No one's immune from that. But they just talked about the obstacles in their life, possibly what they were struggling with and what they were doing to get out. But they had integrity, they had dignity, and they shouted humility. They talked about the flaws in their makeup. And sometimes we go to conferences or we go to workshops and we'll hear speakers from the beginning, everything's perfect, everything's glossy, everything's perfect. Little cute little stories on how wonderful they are and how everything just worked out and they lived happily ever after, the end. And the reality is it's not like that, is it? It's not like that. Life is life. It's unfair. It's problematic. It's how I'm navigating through that stuff. And from time to time, we will find ourselves with our back against the wall after doing all the right things. Chop wood, carry water. Chop wood, carry water, and bang, life shows up. The boss says, you're fired. He or she says, I'm leaving. You go into the bank account. Where did all the money go? Whatever, sickness, things happen. And sometimes, oftentimes, life is not going to work out the way I want. I want to come here and give you a wonderful little pretty story about what a wonderful AA I am, and everything works out great and got these little cute stories. It's just not life. And the insanity is me expecting it to be that way. Yet, when I get aligned with God, in line with God, all the things that happen, somehow I got a new GPS to navigate through that. And the wonderful things that are about to happen will continue to happen because Big Book says the best years of our life are ahead of us. I get to embrace that and really appreciate it. You know, last night, 4th of July, plans and designs, fireworks, you know, big barbecue, 100 friends over. Marion had a commitment at Crossroads in Delray. We honored the commitment. She went down to speak. Only about 20 people showed up. Then it started to rain. And what we did for 4th of July, we went to a diner and had dinner. Just her and I. I had a blast. No pun intended. We went back to our apartment. We have this beautiful terrace that overlooks the, the causeway. And we watched God's lightning show that was going on last night and some fireworks. And it was fantastic. You know, we had to be of service. So sometimes our plans and designs get shifted. But something happens when we're in line with God. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. because I'm okay. She's okay. We're okay. And everything hinges on God. The only thing that's going to allow me to see things, you know, sanity, truth, reporting things as they are, is God. I need to be broken down first, not only out there, but when I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to tell you my first 6 months in AA with butterflies and rainbows, and I turned into Moses after 90 days. But the reality is, almost 6 months to the day, I was a raving lunatic in here, quiet, sitting in the back of the room, but the turmoil in my head was loud. The voices, many, many voices talking to me. I'm a fool. I'm an idiot. I'm a loser. Don't you dare sit in the front row. You're too short. You're too ugly. You're from Brooklyn. You have no education. These people from Minnesota, they must be all educated. They all look rich. You ever do this? Oh, they look rich. I can't go in here. This is an upscale AA meeting. I got the same clothes on for 2 days. They're gonna, you know, that kind of stuff. Act out. Next thing I know, I'm binging and purging on food and a million other things because I was not okay. And I'm going to meetings. I'm going to 2 meetings a day, and I'm not okay. And what did I do in that naive place is try to squeeze the steering wheel even tighter and drive, really pay attention to what I'm doing, and it just unraveled even more. And on December 22nd, 1988, I completely bottomed out in AA. I ran into a wall, and that's where God speaks through brick walls, because I was out of options. I ran out of road again. Again, I saw how my way is not working. People pleasing definitely doesn't work. All of it, all the defects of character came to the surface, and they have a whole bunch of friends that show up with them, and they were gobbling me up every minute. And on December 22nd, 1988, I wanted a drink to wash it away because I knew that would work. I knew even temporarily it would just wash this thing away. And I got to this gentleman's doorstep. He lived in a town called Cottage Grove, Minnesota. And I told him what was going on with me. You know, newcomers are, you say hello on the phone and they talk for 3 hours. Right? He opened up the door, blah. And when I came up for air, he said to me, "Peter, where are you with God in the 12 steps?" I said, "Well, when do you start the steps?" With a little bit of an attitude. "When do you start the steps? Very Brooke, when do you start the steps?" And he says, "When you stop throwing up, you're late." So that's the message I was brought up with. Now, I didn't like that message. What I wanted him to say, give me a hug, some warm fuzzies. I know what it's like. I've been there. Let's go to the diner. We'll have a coffee. We'll talk. We'll read page 449, acceptance. You'll feel better. But he gave me truth. And sometimes the truth does not taste good. Sometimes the truth is not warm and fuzzy. And he gave me that kind of truth because he loved me unconditionally. I was a drunk who was dying in front of him. He was not going to lie to me. More importantly, he took time out of his day when I just showed up to put his day aside to treat another drunk. I did not like the answer. But I still talk about that day 30 years later because he planted a giant seed in my soul that going to meetings was not going to remedy this, and I'm still unmanageable. I'm still hypersensitive, fear-based, insecure, and ego the size of this room, but I don't think so. Everyone else knows. And the defects of character are eating me alive. It was a cancer. What do I do? Well, it was about cracking this book open and learning exactly what I suffer from, that I can suffer from current unmanageability years sober. And those are bedevilments on page 52. I think we talked about that last week. That for me, as a real alcoholic, the drunk on page 21, I need to have this spiritual transformation, this awakening, this spiritual revolution sufficient to overcome this thing called alcoholism, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. And I think some youngins come in here, and it's no fault of their own. Those of us been around a while have to take the hit for this, that they believe just not drinking is what AA is about. AA is not just about not drinking. AA is about doing this work to have a spiritual awakening, go to work for God, to pass it on, stand by the door for the next drunk, and pass on a solution to this thing that wants me dead will settle for me drunk. We can die. We can bleed out in Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll die from 1,000 cuts. just bleed out and do the revolving door. Detox treatment, sober house, jail. Detox treatment, sober house, over and over and over and over. And then we hear about you. It's not even about going to a meeting and giving some wonderful, you know, nice glossy talk about how powerful I am and all the knowledge I have. It's really about sharing. My old sponsor would say, where are we currently, right now, tonight? Where are we? What's going on right now? Is it good, or maybe we got some cracks in the armor, things we're trying to get past where I currently am. Maybe I have some personal relationship stuff. Maybe I got some money stuff that I'm up against the wall, but I'm seeking God to get past it. My solution is God. Because you will identify in that brokenness, yes? You know. Otherwise, we just put in some cassette tape and go home. You don't need me. You don't need a speaker. You know, I think it's a Walt Disney thing. Struggle, live happily ever after, and we go home. And we give the wrong message to some folks because we got some cats in there suffering with maybe 5 or 10 years and everything's upside down, saying, what am I doing wrong? The speaker is nice and glossy and clean. I was brought up in a different lineage. About being transparent, even vulnerable when we share. The ego doesn't want to do that. You know, where do I leak? Where's my car leaking? That's me, my getting around. My car leaks oil, that's me. I'm the car, it leaks oil. I wash it, clean it, it leaves an oil spot wherever I go. That's my getting around, it's broken. Weak flesh, sold into the slavery of sin. That's me, I'm broken. And somehow, in coming to the realization, the aha moment of how broken I am, there's something victorious in that. That I can go to this power and not repeat the same thing over and over and over again. I'll never transcend my alcoholism, but this thing that we belong to called life, the coming and going, we get to transcend that. That's why the carpenter says, wear the world like a loose garment. Go to work, raise the kids, clean the car, go to the Publix, do all these things, the coming and going life. It's loose. We'll get hooked every once in a while. We're going to get hooked. That resentment's going to hook us. That fear's going to get us. That person's going to get me. That's my human condition. But overall, I'm not living with hooks in me all day long. I'm living pretty light. And I call up my sponsor and I read my inventory when I have the hooks in me. They're called resentments and fears. You know, my false expectations on what people should be doing. Coming home at night or after work, a good gauge for me, a good gauge for me is when I put the key in the door and I walk in, my first words out of my mouth is, thank you, God. Actually, I thank the carpenter. How are we, soon as we walk in the door, soon as you walk in, where are you? Oh boy, got stuff going on, don't you? They're home so early. Uh-oh, what's the drama today? What's going on? You know, you're out there and you're pretty relaxed, walking through the park, and you walk in, you're in your house like this. What? Who's coming after me? Yeah. And that's usually a pretty good gauge for where I'm at when I get home, because I could be an AA angel and a house devil, and thank the good Lord I'm not. Chapter 2, agnostics. Where I'm introduced to step 2, specifically step 2 on page 45. I had to learn what agnostic was. I never heard this word before. I know what an atheist is. I know what a believer is, but what's this agnostic thing? And simply put it, agnostic doesn't deny the existence of God. You just can't prove it. And as long as I'm walking around, I got to do what a man's got to do, and I'll worry about God when I die. Or what I've shared many times when I was growing up, God, church, religion was for women and children, and maybe some old folks, but not for a man. Besides, you can't prove it. It's not tangible. And I come into AA, and you want me to lock into something I can't see. And you want me to believe in these miracles? There's no such thing as miracles. By the way, if you want to see miracles end in your life, start taking credit for them. We will see a lot of miracles in AA. You see the newcomer, our chairperson tonight, I remember when she came in. That's a miracle. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, there's God, the God wink again. But as soon as, let's pretend I'm sponsoring, and I says, look what I've done. I've created, you know, Soberstein over here. Look at this. Yeah. The miracle just got lost. Yeah. But no, okay. Agnostic is going to tell me how, where, and why to find God. How? Lay aside old ideas, lay aside prejudice, and express even a willingness to believe in God. This, a lot of it comes down to how willing am I? How willing am I? When I was out there, I'd go to any lengths to get a drink. Illegal stuff, all sorts of weird stuff. Whatever I had to do to get money, to get a pint of liquor so we can go in. And I was doing non-conference approved dry goods, the same thing. Go to any lengths to get the stuff to get in because I knew I was going to experience the consequences if I didn't get straightened out. Coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to be just as willing to go to any lens to experience freedom. And that meant I had to get with God. So I had to lay aside old ideas. One of the things I would do is mix spirituality with religion. I heard spirituality, I heard religion, I had problems with religion. And we're not talking about that. And if that floats your boat, great. But many of us come in agnostic with a lot of bruises about and contempt about religious organizations. And AA was smart enough to stay out of that debate. That we can choose any conception of God we want. Ebby told Bill Wilson that in November. It talks about that bleak November day where Ebby comes over and he's wrestling with Bill and finds, Bill, just choose your own conception of God. And it melted the icy intellectual mountain which Bill had shivered for years. He couldn't negotiate on that, my own conception of God. It comes down to, am I willing to get right with something? So I had to lay aside. They don't even tell us we're right or wrong. They just say, make room for new. Lay aside old ideas. And for me, my G-O-D, when I got here, was you. A group of drunks that I got good, orderly direction. I knew an old-timer Upper East Side in Manhattan. And he was sober when I met him. He had about 28, 29 years. And he was still in the place of turn my will and life over to good, orderly direction. That's what worked for him. And he was as free as you can be. That's what worked for him. And for me, when I got in here, you were tangible. You were real. I could hear you. I could see you. So when you would give me direction, I was getting good old direction from a group of drunks. I would sleep at night with that. I was just laying aside the religious stuff. Where do I find this God? My book says deep down within. The search, the journey has always been in. It still is after 30 years. It's about going in and cleaning out what's blocking me from God, which 4 through 9 is going to do, bring death to self-will and life to the spirit. It's about removing what's in the way, the obstacles. I just need to look at step 2 as a pointer out. Step 2 is a pointer out of this mess, and God's going to do it. When it says restore to sanity, wholeness of mind. I'm seeing truth, reporting things as they are. Can't get drunk on truth. We're always by the lie, and the drunk gets us. Sanity, wholeness of mind, truth, God. All those words are interchangeable for me. You know? Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. After a while, it looks like came to believe in a power because we're having experiences with it. Over on page 47. It says, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? They're even posing the question that way. Not in, but do you believe that there's possibly something out there? Well, yeah. Keep moving. There's one other thing I want to share with you. In the ABCs, it says that God could and would if he was sought. As we move through this work, it'll read that God can and has. Can and has because it's experiential. I show God could and would if I seek him. I've sought him, can and has. There's been a shift. I now went from believing that you believe to having total faith and trust in this God. So why do I lose sight of that during the day when the stuff hits the fan? Oh, forgot about God. I'll take over. I'll fix it. I know what I have to do. I'll buckle down. I'll straighten him out. I'll go talk to them. I'll do all this stuff. And I forgot that God could and would if he was sought. Am I seeking? Usually not. And why? Why should I find this God? Because our book says when we see people solving their problems upon a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, I had to stop doubting the power of God. The God idea worked. My ideas did not. So I walk into a room and I say, Marion, how'd you get better? God, see, how'd you get better? How'd you get better? God. How can I doubt that now? I have a room full of 100 junks all telling me God got them free. And I'm going to say, maybe you got it wrong. The arrogance in me. But I did. I was so desperate in 88 that if AA was a cult, I'm joining. I'll be the head cult guy because I can't live the way I'm living anymore. You know, I wanted to dress like AAs, like the men I saw in AA. I couldn't wait to go out and buy my first sport jacket because that's what they wore. I couldn't wait to go out and buy a nice pair of pants instead of jeans that belonged to my brother. I couldn't wait to go out and buy like a first watch. My first watch I ever got, one of those watches that the guy sells that falls off the truck, it was $10. You thought I was walking around with a Rolex. Because I saw AA men with a watch. I had a watch on. You want the time? I got the time. Anybody need the time? Was that good? No. My book tells me lack of power is my dilemma. For me, I speak for myself, maybe some others, this was the most powerful line in my book. It's what I'm up against. Lack of power is my dilemma. Lack of power is my problem. I look to show I have power through control, manipulation, treachery, dishonesty, bullying, people-pleasing, caretaking. It goes on and on and on to somehow prove to myself I have power. And the reality is I don't have power over anything. That is my problem. But they're telling me I need to find a power greater than myself. So with power, I have no dilemma. Lack of power is my problem. With power, no problem. But I'm not the power. God could and would if he was sought. That's the power. I need to get oneness with this power called God. But it starts with a pointer out, and I want to get there. What is the thing that makes me move through step two? What is the thing that makes me move through step three? What is the thing that catapults me 4 through 9 where rubber really hits the road? Step one. The desperation in step one. If I'm struggling with step two, if I'm struggling with 3, 4, and so on, I don't have that step problem. I have a step one problem because I lost sight of when I got in here, I'll do anything. Just sponsor me. Just tell me what to do. Somehow the wrinkles get out of my belly and I have problems with the steps. It's always a step one problem. Lack of power is my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live and had to be a power greater than me. Where and how is it going to find this power? To solve my problem, not just stay away from a drink. It talks about how difficulty arises with agnostics. I was agnostic when I got in here. I was brought up a Catholic, but I was agnostic when I arrived here. Most of us are agnostic when we get here. We may believe in God, but we're lacking a relationship with God. Most of us are agnostic. And we look at God and all the things, all the calamity in the world, the calamity in our head. Said it was difficulty for me. And as much as I was attracted to spiritual men, I was like, how do you believe like that? They got to wake up a little bit. Reality is reality. God doesn't have his hands on everything. How wrong I was. The difficulty is always with me towards God. There is no difficulty with God towards me or us. There's never difficulty with God towards me or us. It's always me pushing my will up against God. It's always me with a little bit contempt, pride, investigation. It's always me, period, up against God. And that's where the difficulty lies. When I lack faith, God doesn't lack faith in me. God doesn't lack trust in me. But I do with him. Because this wonderful four-letter word called the mind, where all of me exists, the self manifested in various ways, which was what always will defeat me, it has free room and board up in here, and yet I go back to rely upon this broken apparatus to give me truth, to get me out of the well, and it never does, it just digs it deeper. And who lives in this mind is this guy called the ego. This guy wants no part of anything that sounds spiritual, looks spiritual, talks spiritual, walks spiritual, because it just might commit suicide, because it cannot exist there. It has no use for it there. So it's going to fight. It's going to wrestle. It's going to shift. It's going to allow me to see things not as they are. And the thing about living in the truth and sanity is reporting things as they are. When the ego gets defeated, you kind of feel like, oh my God, I'm crumbling on the inside. I'm losing my manhood. And yet just the opposite is happening. I'm becoming more authentic, more real, more of a man. And you can rely, in doctor's opinion, it says you can rely on absolutely anything they say about themselves. We usually go right past that when we read doctor's opinion. It's a little sentence that you people can rely on absolutely anything we say about ourselves. What a tremendous promise for fall down, lying, cheating, drunk. Suddenly you can rely upon them. Why? Because we've become authentic. We've become real. We've become godly in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I want to go to. Step two is about this arrival. Came to believe. They're telling the steps in the past tense. This is what happened to us. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. But it's an arrival. You know, we start off with day one. We're not there. Even though I'm not drinking or drugging, I still have the mind of an alcoholic because I'm still in that mess. I'm still untreated. I haven't treated my alcoholism, and I'm doing a meeting a day, two a day, three a day, but I am still untreated because the mind still owns me. I'm still fearful. I'm still insecure. I get all this stuff. Or just the opposite, to cover up for the fear, I walk around like, you know, I'm sort of like a little gangster. You know, sit there with a chip on my shoulder, a toothpick hanging out of my mouth, and I don't need any of this stuff. Then what are you doing here? You're sitting here. You're sitting here, oh yeah, you know, this speaker, I don't like this guy, but you sat here for a whole hour. See, in the old days, if I don't like you, I leave. If I don't like the place, I leave. I'm not staying here, but you're here for a whole hour, and you're not in the sober house. There's no druggy buggy waiting for you. So I pay attention to that. All that stuff, that guy is afraid. You know, 6'3", full of muscles, toothpick, this is ridiculous. You sat here for an hour, you're afraid. That's why I got all the thing going on. The spirit says, park your butt there for 1 hour, don't move, and you listened. That's the guy we got to get. We got to cut away all this other stuff. Because you're not capable of doing it. I'm not capable of doing it. But God could and would if he was sought. So I sit down with a drunk sits down with me, we open up the book and we begin. You know how many folks come into AA? I was one of them. Here 6 months, I still don't know what I suffer from. What I learned in treatment was a little splash of what I suffer from, but I don't know how deep the roots go with alcoholism. Many times we talk to a new man, and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problem and explain our fellowship. You know, we pretty up come to AA. We do all these wonderful activities. We have conferences. We have a great meeting. After the meeting, we'll go out and eat. We have a lot of fellowship. It's wonderful. You meet people who have the same problem as you. Oh, by the way, you got to find God. And you watch everything change. I knew you were going to get me with something. Because he's meeting, or she's meeting God, with the same old belief systems. So that person has to come to believe that a power greater than himself can restore his sanity. It's an arrival. At some point, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, we will be standing. I say this as sure as I'm standing here right now. We will get to stand in the presence of our God. And you don't need a PhD. You don't need a job. You don't need money. You don't need a fancy car. You just need to be breathing. When the intent is right and we surrender, we will get to stand in the presence of God, and we will know that step two is very authentic and very real. I want more. So came to believe. We will get to a place that this power will restore us to wholeness of mind, which means this mind that told me to drink and drug. Think about this. If the mind is not telling me to drink or drug, I am not drinking and drugging. Which means I have no craving going on, which means I'm not using. If my mind is not telling me to steal from my boss, I'm not stealing from my boss. If my mind is not telling me to cheat on my spouse, I'm not cheating on my spouse. That happens through this awakening within. As the mind gets away, the spirit fills up. Think of it that way. The death of self is successful living. If my mind, which now is talking, it's coming from spirit. We think we're thinking, but it's really coming from the traffic. Instead of the traffic going from here to here, it's going from here to here. So I'm sitting in a meeting, and there's some guy sitting in the back all alone, and spirit says, go over and talk to him. And I say, I should go over and talk to him, and I take the credit for it, right? So you go over and talk to the new drunk. And you sit with them for a while. Or you're going home, and there's a homeless person, and the spirit says, feed one of my kids. I complain about the homeless. How come someone doesn't do about it? And God says, I picked you. Why don't you go feed them? That's why I'm here. So you go feed them. And somehow, in the more I give, I find purpose and direction in my life rather than coming to AA as a taker. The more I take, the emptier I am. The more I give, the more full I am. I get purpose and direction, but I need to have this shift. Okay, I'm almost out of time. I just want to do one more thing. So I was saying this before. We need to ask ourselves one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Now watch this. As soon as we say that God, that we do believe, or are even willing to believe, it says, we emphatically assure you, you're on your way. Think about this for a minute. The tremendous promise the book just said is, if I sit there and say, I'm even willing to believe. Stephen, I'm even willing to believe. I'm not there now, but I'm willing to do it. Book says you're on your way. You got a leg out of the ditch already. I do believe. How do I nurture this? And what step three is going to tell me, are you ready to really do this? Yes. Let's make a decision now to go. We saw the pointer. I want this. And I make a decision to go. And step three is short-lived in the steps. A decision, boom, jump in the pool. 4 through 9. And guarantee that something will happen for every one of us in God's way, in God's time, that we will be remodeled from the inside and will manifest out. That self manifested in various ways, which is defeating me. Something else happens. God begins to manifest in various ways, which brings love and changes people's lives. And when we're filled up with God, we take no credit for it either. Not by works, lest any man shall boast. We give all credit to God. You know, my sponsees making 1 year. Isn't God great? Not look what I've done for them. And we get to see the little flicker in God, even in the drunk coming in one day, because they're here in their life and they're looking for a solution. And those, some of those cats who come in who look restless and discontented, I always go past and say, but they sat here for an hour. The spirit's got them locked into a chair. Pete, go get them. Marion, go get them. And so we stand by the door. That's all I got. Peace.
Okay, help me thank the speaker. Okay, I want to introduce Mike S. for the secretary's report.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm your alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Steve to read the recovered statement. We read this to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Steve, recovered alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict for some alcoholics. If we're cured, we would not be able to drink. We would be able to drink responsibly. No, we're not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol remains with us for a lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we've recovered.
''1940s Big Book Sponsorship, from Ford to second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Would you mind standing up? If some of the ladies wouldn't mind getting with these ladies and getting them back to God. Please join us Monday night's Big Book Study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. We meet upstairs here on the third floor. The meeting starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, big books, big book dictionaries, a little red book, all in the back if anybody is interested. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week. Let's see. Broward County Intergroup. There's volunteer opportunities and I don't know, Pathway to Power with guest speaker Chris Ray, July 27th. Ways to Serenity. There's flyers in the back also if you guys are interested in anything. I can't really. Thank you and see you all next week.
Thank you, the secretary. We have tonight's session and all the past speakers podcast online, for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle, and let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
I am desperately in need of restoration. possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.